The scripture reading today is taken from Psalm 105, verses 1 through 4. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, call on his name, make known his deeds among the peoples. Sing to him, sing praises to him, tell of all of his wonderful works. Glory in his holy name, let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Seek the Lord and his strength, seek his presence continually. Thus ends the reading.
Thank you, Joyce. Today is Reformation Sunday. It's a celebration of the Protestant Reformation. Protestant because we protested some of the behaviors of our parent church, the Catholic Church. Reformation because the goal was to reform the behaviors. The desire was to reform the church from the inside. It was not the original intent to start a new church, let alone the multitude of Protestant churches we now have. The Protestant Reformation got underway in 1517 when Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses, his suggestions, recommendations, to the door of the All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. It wasn't really known as Germany then. Martin Luther was a Catholic priest. His desire was to correct the improprieties of the church, not to start an offshoot religion. Now, Luther had translated the Bible into his native German, and the Gutenberg printing press, invented about 100 years earlier, was able to produce copies of the Bible, making it possible for the common man to read the Bible without the intercession of the Catholic priesthood. Before that, to know what the Bible said, it had to depend on just a few people who could read, and they were handwritten copies. Immediately, people were able to read and interpret the Bible on their own, and a variety of religious groups were to come into being. 100 years go by. In 1534, King Henry VIII seized control of the church in England, appointing himself as head of the church. No longer the Catholic Church, but now the Anglican Church. The Anglican Church and the political royalty were not tolerant of other religions. Separatist groups, the Pilgrims and the Puritans, emerge, critical of the church. To escape persecution, they migrate to America. The Congregational churches were organized when the Pilgrims of the Plymouth Plantation, 1620, and the Puritans of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, 1629, acknowledged what they called their essential unity in the Cambridge Platform, you don't have to remember this, of 1648. And the Protestant Reformation was well on its way. We have red pyramids today because it's Reformation Sunday. And the red pyramids are to remind us of the Holy Spirit and the martyrs of the church, the martyrs who spoke out so we can have freedom of religion. When they were first trying to translate the Bible into English, it got translated into German without too much of an uproar in the Holy Roman Empire, Germany. But the English hierarchy of the church, plus the political establishment, really fought it. You could be killed for translating the Bible into the common language when they were first translating it into English. Fast forwarding to the United States, 1930s. The Congregational Church and the Christian Church, two separate churches, have united into the Congregational Christian Church. At about the same time in the 30s, the German Evangelical Church and the Swiss German Reformed Church have united into the Evangelical and Reformed Church. This is 30s. In the 30s, we got these four churches who made themselves into one. These two are one now, and these two are one. In 1957, these two then united to form the United Church of Christ. That's us today. Cadillac Congregation. Actually, we're first congregational church of Cadillac, United Church of Christ. I keep calling us Cadillac Congregational Church because that feels, but we are UCC, the United Church, these four churches, and they had gotten united with other people before they got to 1957, but here we are. Before we were UCC, we were simply a congregational church. And before that, we were a church society, which was established in 1882. Now, I have put into the bulletin today a statement of faith. I'm not going to go through this. You can take it home and read it to put yourself to sleep tonight if you want to. But this is our statement of faith for where we are today. Our church society here started with a statement of faith written in 1882 by our first minister, who was Reverend Beal. And I have copies of it somewhere, and it doesn't look like this, but basically it says the same thing. It was a very liberal approach at a time when people weren't that liberal, 1882. On the front of our bulletin is a picture of our first church, built right here on this site in 1883. The church society got started in 1882. We've only been a town for 10 years at that point. In 1872, this was the village of Clam Lake, and it was incorporated a little bit later, I think 1877, into the city of Cadillac. We are not the first church to be here. I can see right over there, the Presbyterian Church was here before we were. Not that big brick building, but another smaller building, a wooden one, which burned down. And the Methodists were over here somewhere. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself again. Some of the people that were, I have a picture here. I've got some show and tell stuff I'm going to put out on the table today. I was at breakfast with Audrey and Andy the other day at Country Kitchen, and they have festooned their walls with old pictures of Cadillac. And where I happen to be sitting, right over there, was this picture. And it's the laying of the cornerstone for the post office in 1914. But if you look at it, here's the steeple. Here's our original steeple, because just looking up the hill, you can see that. You can see the Presbyterian Church. You can see the Diggins Mansion, fantastic mansion where the telephone company is now. And I don't know the history of that, but I'm fearful that they just simply tore it down so they could put in the ugly telephone company. We had a lot of prominent people in our church when it was getting established, and I would imagine that the other churches had prominent people too, getting the churches going, because so many more, such a larger percentage of the population were regular church attenders in those days. These are street signs. I'm just going to show them off just to show you what we've got. Whether it doesn't matter if you can't read them. This is Mitchell Street, of course, and George Mitchell is the founder of the town in 1872. He contributed financially to the support of this church. I don't think he was a member, but I think it was his nephew, W.W. Mitchell. There's a funeral home over here. That was where W.W. lived. Up on the hill, there's another Mitchell house. It's one of our historical things. We've got to Mitchell State Park. These are some of our original people, but not George Baby. I don't think he belonged, but his nephews did. Haynes Street. Mr. Haynes, probably the Haynes Lumber people. Farrer Street, Blodgett Street. These are some of our original founding people who belong to our church. Chapin Street, Cobb Street. I think I have seen street signs that say Cobb and street signs that say Cobbs. Go figure. Mosser Street. Mosser Street is just south of us. It's on the corner where the ice cream place is. Mr. Mosser was one of our big supporters originally. He had a construction company, and he built our first building, the one that's on the front of our bulletins today. Commerce Street was a Mr. Rich Man. And a lot of these people were in the lumber business, of course, because when Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked over the lantern and burned down Chicago, it was right about the time that we were getting settled up here, and they came and got, and we sent lumber to Chicago to help. A lot of the lumber to rebuild Chicago at that time came from this area. And it was easy to transport it because they took it down on the lake. I'm out of sequence. This is 39, eat your heart out. 39 choir members, 1935 to 1937. And they didn't, of course, we wouldn't be able to fit. By that time we had this building, but it's a junior choir and a senior choir. You can tell the juniors because they got these big black bows. I'm gonna put all this stuff over here, you can look at it later. Okay, 1882. There was a Mr. Warren who was the head of the Congregational, the big society, the overbranching society. I don't like to call them Congregational Central, but anyway. He thought we should have a congregational church here. And Reverend Beale was a minister from New York City, and his brother was preaching in the Congregational Church over at Manistee. So he was in the area, and Mr. Warren said, well, I'd like for you to go over to Cadillac, Michigan, and start a congregational church. Obviously, he agreed. And at that time here, we had three people that were very mostly involved, a Mr. Gerrish, a Mr. Sawyer, and Jacob Cummer. And they had been Congregationalists. And so they made an arrangement with the minister who was the head of the Methodist Church. And I'm assuming it was the Methodist Church that used to be down here where there's a parking lot now. And his name was Elder Day. His name probably wasn't Elder, but they called him Elder, Elder Day. And he was very gracious and accommodating. So they had Reverend Beale come over here from Manistee to do an introductory service. So he came. Now I have to stop and think, you know, how did he get here from Manistee in 1882? We didn't have Highway 55. That wasn't built then. Perhaps the W.C. Coates Highway was how you got between these two towns in those days. And he would have had to come with a horse and a buggy. So he came over here anyway. He preached Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, and Sunday evening services at the Methodist Church. These beginning they were Congregationalists from someplace else. So they went and they listened. They said, boy, he's great. So the very next day, they talked to him and they hired him. He came over here. Services began in the Opera House. It was some building that was no longer in existence at all. And when I was reading the description of it, they were saying it was down by where the laundry is, but of course the laundry isn't here anymore either. And they started off as a church society. And as a church society, you didn't have a regular charter to be a regular church like we are. It was a society, so they had all kinds of people in it. They had Jews, they had Catholics, they had Unitarians, they had Trinitarians. I said, what's a Trinitarian? Aren't we Trinitarians? But anyway. So all of these people were part of this church society. It was well supported. The funeral home, back here. Mr. Beale came to stay with us, be our first minister, but he was a widower man. He had a small child, a toddler, is described as a toddler, and his mother. So he and his mother and his child came here to be the first ministers that we had. There was a little house right up, probably about right where I'm standing. There was a little house on the back of this property that they purchased. So he lived there with his mother and his little son. And Mr. Cummer said, well, you know, he probably needs a private study somewhere. So up on the hill where the Historical Society is now, the Carnegie Library building, he built him a little house. It looks like a telephone booth. And I think it's just the way it's proportioned because it's the door. If you look at the door, you can see that it's bigger than what you would think it is. And there's a smokestack, so he would have made himself a little fire to keep warm. So he probably had to go up there to get away from his mother and prepare his sermons and things like that. The picture of the original church building looks quite big, but it was an annex, and there were Sunday school rooms and offices and other things on it. And the actual sanctuary was only about this big. There's pictures of our interior of our sanctuary with all the nice chairs. Those nice chairs were sold, I'm not sure when, but they were sold to the Presbyterian Church, and they're still over there. They're in the balcony. They were sold for 75 cents a piece, and probably when we tore down our original building because it wasn't big enough for our needs anymore. In 1917, we had a very, very big enrollment of church members. So in 1918, they started talking about a new church building. 1922, they decided that they would. They visited Toledo. Judge Lamb and Judge Yearned were members here then. Judge Yearned, there are probably people here who remember Jim Yearned, who was the son of Judge Yearned. They looked at the architecture and trying to decide what they wanted to do for the new building. So in 1923, they tore the old one down. We did not have a fire like some people think. They tore down our old building because it wasn't big enough. 1923, they started a new church building, estimated to be $80,000. It was completed in 1924 for $97,000, $850. What doesn't run over? They talked about making it a colonial building, but I went down to see the architects, the DAK architects out in the old state police building, and I took a picture of this building. I said, what is the architecture of this building? It's not colonial. It is sort of a combination of things. Georgian Revival, the corners out here on the outside where you've got what limestone, they call it dentate, limestone corners that are built into the brick, that's what makes it Georgian Revival. The columns and the dome make it Federal. And whatever else it is just whatever the architect designed it to be. In May 2nd of 1894, we are now 12 years in, we had 115 members. November 2nd, 1902, the pastor's salary was $1,800 a year. By 1911, membership had picked up from 115 to 195. In 1919, Henry Colby took charge of the music. How long was he in charge? 60-some years? So, almost like forever. But now, 1922, because there were so many people, they started talking about building the new church. 1929, so they did build a new church in 23, 24. By 1929, our church had 339 members. That's 1929, that's the beginning of the Depression. And if you read through the old records, they began to have, they've got a new church. That means they've got a mortgage. And they had to redo the mortgage somewhere in the middle there, and they were having trouble keeping up the mortgage payments because it was the Depression. But they did get it all. They did get it paid off. 1946, we had a new organ, but it wasn't this one. Got a newer organ. By 1950, the pastor's salary had gone up to $4,000 a year. In 1955, the illumination of the church tower was made possible by funds raised by the Women's Fellowship. At that same time, they bought 200 folding chairs, we still have them, $4.50 a piece. Then in June of 1959, we had a very bad fire up into this area. So went the new organ of whatever I said it was, because now we have a new organ, 1960, our pipe organ, wonderful pipe organ. In 1960, we got a gift of this silver cross. A couple of other things came with it, a couple of vases and something else. I can't remember. In 1962, the Huckle family gave us the carillon that you hear playing for us. A little bit of our history. Some of our firsts, some UCC firsts. We took an early stand against slavery. We were involved in the abolition movement. 1953, we had our first woman pastor. This church, in our church here, we had the first Sunday school, we had the first library, We had a congregators club, men's and women's club, that was very popular, very involved. Big women's fellowship. Men's fellowship didn't last as long as the women's fellowship did. Also, for your interest, I've got pictures of some of the monuments of some of these folks who got us started. Most of them have got very large, imposing monuments. They're, the Diggins monument's very big up at the cemetery. And Sawyer, who was so involved in getting us started, I had to hunt all over to find his monument, because mostly if you just have a nice day, you can wander around and you can find all these people. Could not find Sawyer. Went up to the office and said, "Where is he?" And they said, "He's here." I went back and I looked and I said, "No, he's not. I can't find him anywhere." So they had to come and show me. And he's just a little plaque on the ground. And most of these guys had just tons of money, you know. So they had these wonderful monuments. And Sawyer, I don't know. I wonder what his philosophical thing was that he made himself have just a little in-ground monument. It was very unusual for the times. This is kind of like an old scrapbook. Old record-keeping book. I think this started in 1923, because at that's the time that we became an actual church instead of just a church society. Well, that brings us up to where we are now, pretty much, I think. Best I could do. Well, I've been here for 4 months today. It's been the fastest 4 months of my life. Although they say the older you get, the faster it goes, so I don't know. The next 4 months will be gone by next week, I guess. There is so much more to a church than a minister preaching to the congregation. A church is a community, and it can only exist with the help of many people. So now it's time for my thank yous. And I apologize in advance for special thank yous that are deserved that I may have overlooked. That happens sometimes, and I hope it doesn't happen this time. First, I must thank the trustees. It was a leap of faith, I mean it, a leap of faith on their part to welcome a lay pastor to take over for 4 months, and I thank them. It's been a wonderful 4 months for me. I think, you know, I'm really not very spiritual. I'm much more like educational. You've got that figured out by now. But I do feel like this was a calling. It was just something that I was supposed to do this summer, and I am so very glad I did it. I thank Penny Phelps for standing beside me, and also for standing behind me and pushing once in a while, and also for being the most marvelous listening ear. Thank you, Margie Annis, our music director, for helping me with my hymn selections, and for always being our choir director and responding to my sometimes unusual requests for special music. I thank Rachel Whiteman, our secretary and organist. She can do extraordinary things with both the computer and the organ. And Marge Glander, our retired organist. Marge was the first to teach me how helpful and fun the music ministry people are and can be. Robin and Lowell Corbin, the sound system people, how glad I am to see them on board every single week. And Troy Knight, the backup guy for sound systems and computers. I thank Karma Chapel. She's an unstinting kitchen helper with Penny. I thank Marie Lynn and the rest of the fall cleanup crew that helped get the place spiffed up last week. Thank you to Charlotte Barfield for being our faithful every month and every month communion helper. Thank you, Bob LeVan, for being in charge of the first of the month birthday celebrations. Thanks to Pat McCurdy for being the perfect, kind, patient, children kind of person. And also to Pat and Sue Wachowski for taking on the formidable task of gathering all that is necessary to get us up to date with a new church directory. Thank you, Karen Anderson. Where'd she go? She went downstairs. Thank you, Karen Anderson, for all of the many things you do for church. Most recently, her involvement with our church garden. These are the last flowers of summer from the garden. Thank you, Kevin, for collecting our prayer slips every Sunday. And I would like to thank my children for their help in my ministry. My son, Ed Van Alst, for my first couple of weeks on duty, gave me a crash course in how to get up to date with the computer, and he's had to provide a few lessons since. My son, Andy Van Alst, has been here helping moving furniture, and you just don't know how important that is unless you know how much he hates moving furniture. And moving junk while Penny and I were in a big tidy-up phase. My daughter, Audrey Van Alst, has been a note-taker in the back pew from the beginning. I asked her to do a critique on how I was doing, and she obliged. Too fast, too slow, too loud, too soft. You forgot to say thank you to the choir, and so I hope I have improved. My daughter, Ann Nyer, lives in Mount Pleasant. She's been a number of times here with her support. And while Penny and I were intent on our tidy project, Richard Harvey assembled shelves for us. Richard helps again and again with various projects. A major one was crawling around in our crumbling ceiling and getting it safely latched until the final repairs can be done. Diane Jobson's been heading up the visiting committee for our sick and shut-in folks. And there are three capable volunteers who have made themselves available for desired pastoral counseling. Dave Gaunt, PhD, psychologist from our own congregation, Ed Gilbert, chaplain at the hospital, and Paul Tomlinson, minister of the Presbyterian Church across the street. There are faces that we don't see that deserve big thank yous, too. Kathy Tufford is our child care person, on duty in the nursery every week. The Hope, Inc. workers are here every Wednesday doing our weekly house cleaning for us. Robert Humphreys keeps our grass cut, our yard tidy, and is on call for other fix-ups from time to time. At a distance, I thank Reverend Phil White of the Fort Myers Congregational Church, my pastor there. I called Phil a couple of times when I wrestled with sermon topics, and he let me use his sermon on Lazarus, the sermon that sees the world through Lazarus' eyes after he's risen from the dead, a very unique perspective from what we see in the Bible. And not so far away, only across the street at the Presbyterian Church, I thank my friend of the past 44 years, Dorothy Ann Stenman, because for every single sermon, including this one, Dorothy Ann sat patiently and let me practice on her. Usually she said, "That's good," or "That's interesting, I didn't know that." But sometimes she said, "Huh?" And I knew that didn't mean good or interesting. I thank the search committee, Kelly ahead, for their diligent work in finding a new pastor. They are a dedicated group who aren't very willing to share their secrets, dedicated to finding a pastor who is right for us and who will find that we are right for him or her. Thanks to the Mission Moment folks, thanks to our choir, thanks to the wonderful variety of musicians in our congregation, Ann Lockwood's daughter and Karen Anderson's daughter, and our visitor, Amy Schmidt. It must seem like I plan to say thank you to everyone, and that is what I plan to do. Thank you, everyone, because without everyone, we don't have a church. This is our wonderful present. We saw our past. The future waits for this strong congregation to march forward into it. Amen.